Welcome to the Midday. I'm Stephanie Elkins in for Norman Gilliland, and that means I have the great pleasure of sharing some conversation and music with a very special guest, the concertmaster of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, that is Naha Greenholtz. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's really nice to have you here. We have never met. This is the first time, but I have to say I've been a grateful audience member for a long time.
So it's wonderful to meet you.
Nice to have you here. Well, how long have you been in Wisconsin?
I have been in the Midwest for probably about 9 years now. In Milwaukee, I lived for about 4 years, and then I was back and forth to Cleveland, and I lived in Evanston for a minute, and in Madison, I've been here now for about 5 years.
Oh, great. And I always ask, how did you get started playing the violin? I know you were born in Japan. Did you start with the Suzuki method?
I mean, that's always did. Okay. Yes. Very popular, even in Japan. Yeah. So, I started when I was just about 3 years old, and my older sister started taking lessons. She's a couple of years older than me, and I wanted to, you know, I looked up to her and I wanted to follow in her footsteps. So I went along to lessons with her, and we didn't start with cardboard violins. I think we had the teeny tiny violins, but spent a couple weeks learning how to bow, which is very important in Japan, and have played violin for as long as I can remember.
Nice. We're so lucky here in Wisconsin to have good, strong string programs still mm-hmm. in the school systems.
Yeah.
But Japan is lucky, too, in that way.
Right, yeah.
Well, you are going to be the soloist for the opening concerts, the opening program with the Madison Symphony Orchestra. And the piece that you're playing is a wonderful, wonderful piece. It's the Chaconne from the film The Red Violin by John Corigliano. And can you just maybe give us a little bit of a background of the piece?
Sure. So the piece was written after Corigliano worked on the soundtrack for The Red Violin, the movie, and a muse, I guess, for the creation of this piece, and also for the soundtrack was the violinist Joshua Bell, and his playing, and in the soundtrack he's featured throughout, often playing this melody that's connected spiritually and by blood to the violin, called Anna's Theme, and I'll play a little of that to prepare the listener, the soundtrack revolves around Anna's Theme, and also the Chaconne, which is a musical form very old from the Baroque period. Also called the Passacaglia and the Canon. Those are other names for it.
I think of the Chaconne or those types as almost like a chord progression where you get to kind of improvise over the top, almost like today's blues players
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, it's had a huge influence in, you know, especially in popular music. The basis of a lot of popular music is, like you said, the chord progression and then the melody and the thematic material changing on top. So he takes snippets from the movie. If you've seen the movie, you'll recognize bits of it, and it's inspiring to learn the piece and then to go back and see the movie and see what was the emotion behind it. What to have that kind of explicit visual aid is kind of unusual in music. So it's fun in a way.
Well, why don't we hear Anna's Theme? Can you play that for
sure.
us?
Well, I thought maybe actually we could start with the Chaconne, since that's the basis of the whole thing.
So, sure, that would be great.
I think the most popular classical music rendition of the idea of the Chaconne, the ground bass, might be in Pachelbel's Canon.
Right.
And so, of course, that goes...
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very standard Baroque chaconne or a ground bass that's an even number of notes. It's 8 notes. And the way that Corigliano kind of uses the idea of the chaconne but modernizes it is very interesting. He makes it in 7 chords, which gives it kind of an unsettled feeling. It's also unusual chords. And I'll play the straight version, the one time that the violin has it here. So this is the basis of the entire piece and the soundtrack, and he's able to give it his own voice by playing around with the rhythms and playing around with the instruments that pass it around the orchestra. For example, I just played 7 chords in a row, but actually in the music I'll play it for you. It has triplets. Rhythms, it has dotted rhythms, and it's uneven. And it really ends on this expectant chord, like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, it creates a lot of mystery, and it sounds kind of otherworldly.
Absolutely. And in this version, actually, it launches right into Anna's theme, so I'll play that for you now.
Theme runs through the entire movie and through the entire soundtrack and through the entire chaconne in various ways, doesn't it?
That's right. I believe in the movie it's the song that Anna, the violin maker's wife, sings to her or hums to her unborn child. And they both die during childbirth. So it's very gruesome, actually, in the storytelling of it. But I think it's a really touching melody, and it goes along with the chaconne that he set up perfectly.
The sound of your violin is beautiful, and I have to say, here in the studio, there's no reverb, there's no effects going out on your instrument, but it has such beautiful resonance. What kind of violin are you playing?
I'm playing an old Italian, Antonio Gragnani, from 1778.
Wow.
And it's been my instrument now for about 10 years, I feel very lucky to be able to play it.
Oh, it's just stunning. It's filling up the room. It's beautiful.
Thank you. And I have to say, the idea of this movie is really, it opens the doors to your imagination, especially if you play an old instrument. You know, every instrument has a story, and my instrument is a little over 200 years old. The instrument in the movie is 300 years old, but to think about the places it's been and the people who've played it is really, it's a fun journey.
I can imagine. Does your instrument have a nickname?
I don't think so.
No. And how did you find your instrument?
I went to a great shop in Albuquerque called Robertson & Sons, and it's one of the most modern violin shops I've ever been to. It's not your typical smells of tobacco and rosin, kind of dusty, you know, tucked away in a New York alley kind of violin shop. Or there are many in Chicago as well, but it's kind of a glass and steel, beautiful place, and they have a great recital hall that you can try play instruments. And it's funny to see how these people who are very comfortable with these old instruments, they'll come out holding six or eight violins in their two hands.
And that sounds a little risky. So how did you prepare for performing the Chaconne? Have you ever played it before?
I've never played it before. I just studied the piano part. I listened to it when John suggested it to me, and it's a beautiful piece. It's really rhapsodic and dramatic, and so it's been just fun summer project, in fact.
It seems like it's incredibly challenging. The range of the violin, it goes up into the highest.
It does, notes. It does. And it's a huge orchestra as well. A lot of brass, a lot of percussion. And so he often uses the really high range in order to make sure that the violin can soar above the big orchestra.
When you do a piece like this, which was, you know, it was, as you mentioned, written for Joshua Bell, mm-hmm. Do you try to find your own voice when you're expressing the music, or do you try and recapture what it was that Joshua Bell brought to the performance, or how do you come to that?
In this case, I didn't study recordings too much. I just, just tried to let my own voice sing through. That's usually how I approach a concerto. And it's really a personal thing. And it does depend on the repertoire. For example, when I've played a really, really thorny new American concerto, like the Jennifer Higdon concerto, I did rely quite a bit on the recording to just get a new language in my ear. But this is really, it's a accessible sound, and he uses the orchestra in very like cool and funky ways. There's a little jazzy section. I can play a little bit of it for you, where he uses technique of wood on string. So it's called colegno, and sounds like this. So I'll play. This is coming out of the cadenza. The cadenza winds down, and he gets a little bit playful with the chaconne. Throughout the section, there's a slap bass. There's a bass drum responding as well. And I think Corleano grew up in New York City. His dad was the concertmaster of the New York Phil. So I imagine that there's some jazz club influence there.
It sounds like it. Yeah. Well, he's so creative. I mean, he won, I think it was an Academy Award for this score. And he had a Grammy for his first symphony, I think, and a Pulitzer for his second symphony. So he's just very, very creative and,
right, yeah,
and original and and musical and melodic. And
absolutely.
He really is the whole package. And he's written operas. The Ghost at Versailles is a wonderful opera, and he's still creating. Mm-hmm. Has the symphony been in touch with him? Does he know when his work gets performed around, or do you know if there's any communication there?
I imagine that he's aware when his pieces get played with orchestra, especially. That's kind of a big deal. And also the soundtrack he's spun off into the Red Violin Caprices as well, and I know that those get played pretty often.
Yeah, they're awfully popular. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of a visual medium, the rest of the program this weekend is pretty interesting. So,
absolutely,
you're doing The Planets by Gustav Holst, which is just a wonderful, massive piece of music.
It is.
For the orchestra.
Yes.
I think of Holst, and he was the music director for the St. Paul's Girls' School, and he wrote all his beautiful little lovely pieces for the students there. And then all of a sudden, this The Planets.
Yes.
And you're going to be projecting in HD a film made by NASA of The Planets during this performance.
So yeah.
That sounds really interesting. Is this something new that the symphony is doing for the first time?
I've actually done this production before, and it's really not with the Madison Symphony, but it's breathtaking. It's spectacular. We got a sneak peek at last night. We had a run with the film. We'll be playing with stand lights, and so the lights on stage are lower. And the photos, as you're taken around the rings of Saturn, and actually John had us stop playing yesterday during the opening of Venus, and he had us look at the screen because the image on there was just so stunning. And he said, you know, when I saw this, it just made my jaw drop. And so I want everyone to enjoy this moment.
Wow, it sounds just fascinating. A real multimedia kind of experience.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be nice. I know the music was more inspired by astrology than by astronomy, but it'll be nice to see the planets as we're hearing hearing Holst's music.
Yeah.
And it will show off the orchestra, certainly.
Definitely. it's a tight fit on stage, but the sound that's going to come out is grand.
I think the score designates for large orchestra. And boy, it is large. Two harps and lots of percussion and that kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of auxiliary wind instruments and full strings. So
nice. And then the other piece is by George Enesco, right?
That's the one piece on the program I'm not playing, so don't know much about it. I do know it ends loud.
It's the Romanian Rhapsody No. 1, and I know it incorporates a lot of traditional folk melodies, and that's one that we play here on a regular basis. It's a lovely piece of music.
That's a great pairing with the Corleano, which is also in its own way very rhapsodic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've always wanted to ask. I mean, I grew up with piano and flute and things like that, but not strings. And so I see what you do on stage, but what are the concertmaster's duties behind the scenes? What do you do with your section and otherwise?
Well, we start the music prep process off by bowing the first violin parts, which sets an idea for an interpretation for the piece. And so whether things are going to be on the string or off the string, how the phrasings are going to be, these are largely determined by the bowings. And so I'll mark the parts, and then these get passed on to the second violin, viola, cello, and bass players, and they match if we have unison parts, if we're playing together in sections, if we have similar things that we're trading off. All of that is influenced by my markings, by the concertmaster's markings. And then from there, when we get into the rehearsal process, it's more of a negotiation. And it's more of a collaborative process with the conductor, who, of course, has their own interpretation for the piece, and to understand that and to digest that as a group during the rehearsal process, during the 4 or 5 rehearsals that we have. Well, once we get into that process, I would say my job is just to make that as smooth as possible. So if that means during breaks, you know, going to a different section and saying, how about this, the note lengths here, or just addressing things around the edges, maybe. And then, of course, in a more public sense, that often composers will write solos for the concertmaster part, and so to rise out of the section sound, there are a couple little solos in the Holst, and some solos are bigger than others, but that's always a fun part of the job as well, and stressful in a way, because to change from the blended sound of the section to having a more solo sound that's really going to project if there are other instruments playing is a mental switch, and it always takes a planning many bars in advance to really get into the headspace to switch over to that.
Oh, I imagine. Well, can you give us one more little taste of the Chaconne before you
sure.
go? We're getting close to 12:30. It'll be time for our quiz question in just a couple of minutes, but
okay.
I'd love to hear your violin one more time.
Let's see. There was one little other device that Corigliano uses that I wanted to illustrate, and that's the use of aleatoric writing, which means that the notes are written on the page, but people either have a choice of what to play within those notes or when to play them. And so at the opening of the concerto, I'll play this phrase, and then all the first violins copy that phrase, but one very quickly as soon as the person in front of them plays it.
Huh, boy, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah, so it's like the audio equivalent of a vague memory, I think.
Hmm.
Launches us into Anna's theme again.
Mm, just beautiful. And again, the sound of your violin is just delicious.
Oh, thank you.
Just wonderful. Well, the concerts are Friday and Saturday in the evening, and then Sunday matinee. And listeners can find information on our website at WPR.org. We have an events tab, and you can click there and find all the details, or you can also go to MadisonSymphony.org, where there's also a nice bio of Naha Greenholz, who has been my guest here on the midday.